is brought to you by Head Start Basketball.
Our families paid to be a member of MAC Basketball. We have to provide a service that provides value for the financial amount that they put in. Now, we don't promise anyone anything, right? We're going to promise that we're going to put together good practices and we're going to work together as a group to try to build a team. And at the end of it, as a consumer, you're going to sit down there and say, as a family, did that check that I wrote, did it have value and did I gain something out of the season?
Kevin McNamara is the girls' basketball head coach at Trinity High School in Cleveland, Ohio. He has led the Lady Trojans to 106 wins during his 7 seasons at Trinity. Kevin is also the director of MAC Basketball, an AAU club based in Cleveland, Ohio. Over 150 girls have gone on to play at the college level after competing for MAC Basketball. Kevin has been selected to coach in All-American camps for both Under Armour and Adidas. After starting 20 years ago with just girls' teams, this recently completed AAU season saw MAC Basketball field over 50 boys' and girls' teams. Grab your notebook and pen as you listen to this episode with Kevin McNamara, girls basketball head coach at Trinity High School and the director of MAC Basketball. Hey, Hoopheads, practice like the pros this July with our partners and friends at Dr. Dish Basketball. Their Dr. Dish shooting machines are undoubtedly the most advanced and user-friendly machines on the market. Save up to $4,000 on multi-unit orders in the month of July. Learn more at drdishbasketball.com and follow their incredible content at Dr. Dish B-Ball on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube. Mention the Hoopheads podcast and save an extra $300 on the Dr. Dish Rebel, All-Star, and CT models. Visit drdishbasketball.com for details. That's a great deal, Hoopheads. Get your Dr. Dish shooting machine today.
Hi, this is Paul O'Connor, Pro Skills Basketball Columbus City Director, and you're listening to the Hoopheads Podcast.
If you're looking to improve your coaching, please consider joining the Hoopheads Mentorship Program. We believe that having a mentor is the best way to maximize your potential and become a transformational coach. By matching you up with one of our experienced mentors, you'll develop a one-on-one relationship that will help your coaching, your team, your program, and your mindset. The Hoopheads Mentorship Program delivers mentoring services to basketball coaches at all levels through our team of experienced head coaches. Find out more at hoopheadspod.com or shoot me an email directly, mike@hoopheadspod.com. Follow us on social media at hoopheadspod on Twitter and Instagram, and be sure to check out the Hoopheads Podcast Network for more great basketball content. Prepare like the pros with the all-new Fast Draw and Fast Scout. FastDraw has been the number one play diagramming software for coaches for years. You'll quickly see why Fast Model Sports has the most compelling and intuitive basketball software out there. For a limited time, Fast Model is offering Hoopheads listeners 15% off FastDraw and Fast Scout. Just use the code HHP15 at checkout to grab your discount, and you'll be on your way to more efficient game prep and improved communication with your team. Fast Model also has new coaching content every week on its blog, plus play and drill diagrams on its playbank. Check out the links in the show notes for more. Fast Model Sports is the best in basketball. Grab your notebook and pen as you listen to this episode with Kevin McNamara, girls basketball head coach at Trinity High School and the director of MAC Basketball. Hello and welcome to the Hoopheads Podcast. It's Mike Klintzing here. Maybe with, maybe without my co-host Jason Sunkel. I'm not sure whether Jason's kids are going to allow him to jump out with us tonight. But nonetheless, I am pleased to be joined by Kevin McNamara, the girls' varsity basketball coach at Trinity High School and the founder of MAC Basketball AAU. Kevin, welcome to the Hoopheads Pod.
Oh, thanks, Mike. Appreciate it.
Excited to be able to have you on. Want to dive into all the things that you've been able to do in your basketball career. Let's start by going back in time to when you were a kid. Tell me a little bit about your first experiences with the game.
Well, my first experience with the game really became as a fan of the game itself. I was one of those guys in grade school and high school who truly wasn't a very good basketball player. I was the rebounder, screener, guy on the floor, take charges. I wasn't very skilled, but I found myself being useful as doing all the little things that were necessary to help the team aspect of the game. So I, growing up and as a younger kid in North Olmsted, went to St. Richard's grade school, and really because of some great leadership and some youth coaches that I had, really found the X's and O's part of sports is what I enjoyed in football, basketball, and baseball. I was an average high school basketball player. Got varsity minutes here and there, spot, that role player kind of guy, and knew my role, accepted it, and really embraced it. And I think that that's really helped me carry on as a coach, somewhat pulling for the underdog, somewhat pulling for the kid who is valuable to the team without having it appear in the paper and the box score. The culture side of sports is, is king in my world, and it's something that I profess to teach all along through. I got involved really in coaching early 2000 when my daughter Brittany, who is now the head girls coach at Midview High School, was like in fourth grade, third grade. And she was at Holy Trinity in Avon. They needed a coach. I jumped in. She wanted to play more. I jumped in to try to find her some extra time in an AAU world. We put an ad in the newspaper when she was in fifth grade in Lorain County in the Chronicle-Telegram. 42 girls showed up. And I was like, oh, my God.
That's pretty good, man. Seriously. Man,
oh, it was awesome. I was way in over my head already. And, man, we thought we were the bomb. We thought we were it. We walked into our first game, and we got just whacked by like 40. And I thought, oh, my gosh, I don't have a clue of what I'm doing, right? There's a whole other world of basketball that I found. Now, for me, the greatest part of growing and developing that group was when they were turned in seventh grade, we ended up beating that same team who beat us by 40. And really, that's the X's and O's and the player development part of it. And what I fell in love with, and as a dad, what I thought was important in the early 2000s and what's important today in 2022 is so past what I had thought was what it was, and so much more about the relationships, the development of the mind, and really just, and especially on the girl side, getting kids to believe in themselves and more importantly, that you believe in them.
So how did you shift that? Obviously, you start to see it as you're going through the years and you're gaining more experience with going through the process with your daughter and with the teams that you were coaching and that you were involved in. But how did you start to actually take that from, I think something's going on here and I got to focus more on the culture piece. I got to make sure that my teams are together. How did that shift the way that you approached, whether it was practices, whether it was the team dynamics of how you put it together? Just what changed for you from those first couple of years to kind of where you are now?
Yeah, I think a lot of it has to do with who I tried to listen to. As parents, we always tell our kids, listen, you're not here. You might hear me, but you're not listening to what I'm saying. And I think that once I started to listen to people, and there are certain people who in basketball over the course of the last X years, and I still to this day enjoy going to a game, sitting behind a bench that I really have no care about who wins. Maybe I have kids on both teams. And I love listening to the coaches of what they say in timeouts and what the strategy is. And then I can kind of go, all right, I like that, right? Or interesting. But for me, it was always a player or people. I'll tell you something that was really interesting. When Brittany's team, and that's who we had, when they were in like, I don't know, eighth or ninth grade, there's a group of parents. They said, hey, we want to go out of town. And we just decided, okay, we went to Las Vegas. And we went out to Vegas and we played. And it was really a great experience because for me, the games were, it was no big deal, but it was a fun trip. But I was sitting in a gym and I just found myself going to watch games. And as I'm sitting there in a gym, I noticed this a man and his wife. And they were watching their daughter. And his name was Wayne Tinkle.
Yeah, I'm going to tell you a story about Wayne Tinkle in a second. So finish yours.
Cool. So I'm sitting there and I start talking to who I didn't know who he was, right? And we're just going over and I'm watching the game and his oldest daughter was on the court who ended up going to Stanford. And his younger daughter who ended up going to Gonzaga was sitting next to him in the stands. And his son who ended up playing at Montana, they were all there, right? Well, I didn't know this until years later, obviously where they ended up. But as I was talking to Wayne, We probably sat there for 3 hours, and he pulled out a dry erase board. We talked about what was going on the court. We talked about his experience as a college coach and as a player and his development. And man, I soaked that 3 hours in. He gave me his card, and probably once a year I hear from him.
That's very cool. And that's awesome. That's what basketball is all about, right? I mean,
great community.
The connections and how close knit it is and how easily you can be connected from one person to the next. That's been one of the things with the podcast that has been really unbelievable. It's honestly probably been our best way of finding guests is when we get done talking to somebody, we just say, hey, is there anybody else in your Rolodex that you think might be interested in jumping on and would be a great guest? And inevitably, everybody who comes on ends up sending me 2, 3, 4 names of guys or coaches that would be that they recommend. And then you end up connecting with them. And it's like, man, these guys are all just, you just see how willing everybody is to share. That's just that's a really cool piece of it. So my Wayne Tinkle story, when I was at Kent and I was playing, I'm pretty sure it was an Athletes in Action team that we scrimmaged against one preseason. And my roommate, who must have been my sophomore year, my roommate was not a basketball player. And so he would come to a lot of the games, and he happened to be at that game. And for some reason, obviously, the name Wayne Tinkle kind of has, you know, it's a little bit of a kind of a funny name. So my roommate sort of gravitated toward, man, I can't believe you guys were playing against Wayne Tinkle. And then for a long time, Wayne Tinkle kind of disappears off the radar after college. And then he comes back and gets a higher profile coaching job. And my roommate, even over the course of the last 30 years, there'll always be some reference. He'll bring up and he'll be like, hey man, Wayne Tinkle. And you're just, it's just, I don't even know. Like, obviously I don't know Wayne in any way, shape or form on a personal level, but just, it's a story that keeps kind of recirculating from way back, whatever it is, 30, 32 years ago now that I played against him. And just, it's just the name that stuck with me and my roommate.
Name, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. No doubt. But I got to tell you, he was one of the most engaging, you know, guys who are out there. We had conversations about recruiting and the things I should and shouldn't do. And he ended up coming to watch one of our games. And on that team that Brittany had, and that was the first team I really developed, you know, from, let's say, most of those kids to 7th through high school. There ended up, out of the 9 girls, all 9 of them played in college. And 7 of them went Division I. One of the girls was top 40 in America. Now, again, I didn't have anything to do with that. She was 6'3" and crazy athletic, and right, it didn't have nothing to do with what I taught her. And he watched the game, and he's like, man, you got something here. And I was excited to hear from him. And like I said, it's just always been one of those people who, it's funny, but yeah, Wayne Tinkle's name, it's obviously something you don't hear every day, and, you know, it kind of sticks out a little bit.
So going back to your daughter's team, when does it transition from, I'm coaching my daughter's team and we're getting involved in the AAU scene to, hey, I want to start putting together an actual AAU organization and start to create more teams and really start to put together what has become now one of the premier organizations here in this area in Cleveland?
Oh, thank you. Yeah. I think, you know, for me, it's, you know, what had happened was I found a passion for doing it, and I think it translated to people who saw what I was doing, and then it just became a grade above and a grade below, and then another team in that age group, and then, you know, went from 2 teams to 4 teams, and then I was always in the girls' side, and then it, you know, and then after X amount of time, let's say, you know, 10 years or so, it then, you know, my sons were playing, and what do I do with them, and you know, it just all of a sudden, and then this year we had, you know, 53 teams. And I'm real lucky to have a boys director in Izzy Santiago, who his name is golden in basketball, is not only one of the top players ever, you know, get on a court in Cleveland, but as a certified ref who's college, official and done high school state championship games. You know, so I've been real lucky to make sure we, you know, you align yourself the right way, because to me it's all about, you know, involving yourself with good people. You know, everybody gets this perception of who people are until you really get to know them. And there's nothing more important to me than, you know, people hearing my story of, you know, I'm certainly not a braggart when it comes to it. I tell the first thing I tell everybody, look, I wasn't any good at basketball. I love the game, right? And if you love the game and you have a passion for it, you know, people find that and they believe in it and they see it. And then when they're not a part of what you're doing, they almost want to condemn it at some point because either they wish they were a part of it or, you know, for some reason they think that they didn't belong or they weren't invited in. And it's just never like that. As the time grew and we became to get more and more popular with teams, it just kind of took a grassroots effort. I'm not a guy who goes to games and sits in the stands and hands out cards. You're never going to see me walk up to a little boy or girl or a high school kid and, hey, where do you play? Where's your mom? It's not what I do. And I want, you know, people like we built this grassroots to continue to build that way and stay that way because I think that part of what we do is unique and it has led and kind of helped our development and growth as a club and the respect that comes along with it. Culture is king, and I want to make sure that, you know, don't get me wrong, this is a business, but, man, you'll see me. I think I probably raise more money for kids in this area and for local charities than any club around and would challenge anybody to think it because we put at least $10,000 back into our club this year for kids who either couldn't travel, we're helping with travel, we're helping them with, you know, fees, we're helping them with whatever it is. And, you know, we're not publicly lauding that or putting that out there because we're doing this what we want to do. We're not looking for the pat on the back.
Talk about some of the things you do, just so people have an idea of how you're going about raising that money and just what the process is.
So when I train during the off season and, you know, when I find those windows and a lot of times we'll do a lot of group training things, you laugh. I take an old shoebox and I wrap it in duct tape and I put a little slit in the top of it. And every time somebody comes and trains with me after I pay the gym bill, I put 100% of that money in a shoebox. And in March, when we're going to get ready to play, I open up that shoebox. And every nickel that goes in there gets allocated into a fund for people who need help. And 100% of it every year has gone to that. And typically it turns out to be, gosh, I mean, thousands of dollars by the time it's said and done. You know, it's really, really important for me to make sure because, again, I grew up one of nine, the oldest of nine. My dad was one of 15. I didn't have a nickel to my name. I tell kids about, you know, I was in welfare lines and we got food stamps in the 70s and you went to special stores with special funny money and booklets to get mac and cheese. I didn't go to college. I never graduated college. I was a little bit of a troublemaker in high school and played sports and thought that, you know, that was the epitome of life. And really never had any guidance or leader. I had great parents, but they were just, you know, they were never again led themselves. And so I found myself that how can I continue to give back? Because I was that kid that parents had to pay for, right? I know coaches bought me dinners and paid for my little league and paid for my basketball. I've had coaches buy me shoes. You know, when I went to school at St. Richard's, I was an altar boy and the priest bought me a bike because I didn't have one. And, you know, and again, no fault to my mom and dad who I love dearly. It's just, you know, part of the way that I was raised and I grew up and it's just the way it goes through life. And so for me, it's okay, if my work can help someone else, and I don't know who that is, I don't care who it is, and they truly need the help, that I want to be able to afford to do that for them. Every year, our tournament, the North Coast Cup, I take money out of the registration. We don't ask any parents for any money. All the money that's out of the registration, because that's a MAC basketball tournament, $25 from every team goes towards a local charity. This year, we ended up raising over $5,000 for Katie McNally. Katie McNally played for me in 2012. She graduated from down at Ohio State. She ended up playing college basketball in Lake Erie for a couple of years, transferred to Ohio State. Katie, at 28 years old, found out she had leukemia and a severe blood disorder. And she went into chemotherapy and had to have a bone marrow transplant. And she's just fighting for her life. And insurance dropped her. So we ended up raising the money. We gave her dad and one of her sisters
a check for, I think it was $5,300 this year that went just to Kate to help her out. The year before, we raised money for OROC, which is ovarian cancer, Outrun Ovarian Cancer. One of our moms got sick. The girls play on our team. We felt that it was something that we could teach our kids what's going on in their life. The ovarian cancer is a female-centric disease. So what better way for us to raise some money in a female group than to help teach them about it at the same time? Katie McNally was a girl just like them. She played basketball and wore the same uniform for me. And if we have avenues in which we could help other people out, you know, it's just something at home that, you know, I'm built on. I believe in giving everything we can back to whoever we can. And laying that principle and foundation, if it clicks in one person's mind and one kid kind of turns their head or is proud to be in that moment when we're giving the checkout, man, that's why this is what it's about for me. I appreciate the business side of it. I appreciate, you know, basketball in a whole. The relationships and the opportunities is what I never knew was going to be the greatest payoffs in life for me.
How do you think about, this is something that we just did an interview right before we talked to you. We talked to Brian Litvak, who's the CEO and founder of League Apps, and they do like management software for different organizations. And Brian and I started talking about just kind of how youth sports has changed from when you were a kid, when I was a kid, where you just went out and you played on the playground or you played on your driveway or you were playing in the neighborhood with kids and you didn't have the travel basketball. You didn't have the AAU basketball that you and I are a part of today. And it also, though, has led to a situation where it kind of goes to what you were just describing, where you have this accessibility issue where kids who are less economically advantaged sometimes get phased out because they just can't afford to be able to do some of the travel and some of the things that lots of kids who are from the suburbs or who are a little bit better off have an opportunity to do. So I'm just curious to get your thoughts on just the way basketball has shifted in terms of the system that we have today and how maybe we have to make sure and be conscious of the fact that we bring all kids along with us and we don't just leave some behind, which I know is a really difficult problem to try to figure out the answer to.
Yeah, I think it starts at the top. You know, I think it starts with whoever is the creative director and the leader of your program, right? I've taken it upon myself to make sure I insert that Izzy and I make sure we know that we are putting kids first. And one, identifying them, right? That can also be difficult because, you know, how do you know, right? I mean, I had a loving mother, right? And I was with her, but you wouldn't have known we didn't have anything because I wasn't a miserable child. You know, I didn't, you know, act out. I didn't have ripped clothes. But again, we were a welfare family. And so it's identifying, but as a leader, and if you're in youth sports, and I guess part of me is I can't believe that everybody doesn't think this way, but I'm not naive not to believe that. But, you know, I see all these guys go out there and, you know, hey, I'm going to give back to my community. I'm going to do this. This is for the kids. Man, they're the ones that are full of crap, right? These are the guys who aren't really looking out for anything more than maybe them coaching their son with a good group of basketball players or, you know, them going out there and trying to raise their own profile or whatever they need to do. You know, I always say, man, give back to those players. So people look and say, hey, you know, it's expensive to play AAU. Well, yeah, you and I both know it, right? There's a lot of court time that comes in. There's uniform. You've got to pay the coaches. When you travel in our club, you're paying for the coach's expenses because he is a hired employee of the club at that point. You know, we're trying to cover insurance has gone up through the roof because we have to cover our coaches and the players and liability across the board. And so there's all these little intangibles that get in there. And people are like, you know, well, how do you manage that? And how do you know who's the one you should be able to help? That's the hardest thing. Identifying, finding out, having conversations, getting to know people. I just think it's where we're different. I think we've created a niche of finding out and having these heartfelt relationships. I hear all the time from kids who go, Coach Mack, I didn't play for you in AAU, but I hear more from you or I see you more often and you talk to me more than my AAU coach did when I was playing for him. And I'm like, yep, I hear that. I heard that. I've heard that from college coaches. Mac, yeah. You work out my girls and I appreciate it, right? And You know why? Because you got to want to do it, right? But isn't that the role of a parent, of an administrator in youth sports? That, you know, I learned a lesson a long time ago when I first had met Mike Elder at Avon. An elder's role, which I didn't see it at the time, but I totally understand it afterwards. He wanted to have the worst player on his team have the same experience as the best player on the team. And I always thought that to be, no way, you can't do that. It's just no way. It's impossible to happen. But I understand it, right? Because you want, it may not be in playing time, it may not be in on the field or on the court, but if they feel like they're a part of it, then that's a big thing. So if we're getting to know these kids, you'll know who needs the help. And then as I have my coaches have conversations with them to identify, and then I'll call them personally off the record without anybody knowing and say, hey, you know, look, I get you're having a problem here. Let's figure it out.
Yeah, it's a great point. And I think that by putting kids first, that's what it always comes back to me is, look, you've said it a couple times, and I run a basketball organization and run camps, and there's certainly a business aspect to it, right? As you said, yep. There's expenses, there's things that, you know, you're in it to be able to run your business and be able to make some money as a part of that. But I think ultimately what it comes down to is that if what you're doing is for the benefit of the kids, and you sort of frame all your decisions as to what's going to be the best for this player, this kid, this family, then that's where I think you get that intersection where everything makes sense and where Right. Everybody's got rowing that boat in the same direction because you have the kids' best interest at heart. And just like you, we've all seen that underside of organizations, people who have a different agenda, who their agenda right. is about just, I'm going to line my pockets as much as I can, as often as I can. And if you align with what I'm trying to do, great. But if you don't, then I'm just going in another direction and I'm not sure that I really care about you or your interests. And that's where I think it's been something that what I look at, and full disclosure here, my son has played with Kevin this year for the first time with his organization. And he's mentioned Coach Izzy a couple times. And my son's just had a tremendous experience thus far. We've got a couple more tournaments to go here in July. But it's just really been something that has been a tremendously positive experience for him. And to me, again, that's what it's all about, is you want it to be a positive experience for your kid. And so I definitely, when I'm listening to you talk and I hear about the things that you've done and that you're continuing to do, those are all things that attracted me to what you were trying to accomplish. And that's really, again, I think you're doing it the right way.
Thank you. Yeah, it's an effort, right? You got to want to be able to do it. I appreciate you seeing it because sometimes it goes unnoticed. And you know what? That's part of it as well. And, you know, again, that's not what we're looking for, right? I don't want anyone to know the kid that we're helping.
Right.
Right. I'm cool with that. It's not what it's about. But yeah, no, you got it. You hit the nail on the head. Thank you very much.
What's been, when you look back over the growth of your organization, if you could point to one, maybe two things that have been the biggest challenge to getting it to where you are today, what would those challenges be when you think back?
Oh, gosh. I think when I first got it in, I started making waves. People started aligning themselves to try to push me out. And right. And the big boys didn't like it, man.
Understood. Understood.
And so, you know, they tried to align they couldn't do it. And for me, I've always built everything I've done in my life after a certain point about networking and aligning people who, you know, you really believe in. And sometimes I've gotten burned, of course, don't get me wrong, but I believe the character matters. And when you can build yourself around those types of people, you win with people. And I kind of had to, you know, fight it off and struggle and but I had people who believed in me and what I was doing, and we had to overcome it, you know? So it's a lot of the, you know, oh, he's never done it before. He's never had a kid before. Well, you know, now almost 20 years into it, I have over 200 kids, girls who played in college basketball. You know, we started on the boys a couple years ago, and proud to say that we've had, you know, almost, I know it's a minimal amount in the big scope of things, but we've gotten our first 10 to 12 kids in boys basketball. Obviously, your son and the rest of these classes in high school where Izzy's doing an unbelievable job in, there's, that number is going to increase significantly. You know, but, you know, you kind of have to fight through it, wade the water, and get lucky that people believe in you. And, you know, it's really, you know, what I did. And again, there's many factors that go into that. But, you know, as a person, you go through your own personal trauma that makes you change the way you are. And for me, I had to go through, you know, things in life that made me appreciate people and things that I had more importantly, for sure.
If you had to point to one or two people along the way that you feel have been the most instrumental in helping you have the success that you've had, who comes to mind immediately?
Yeah, I mean, I'm going to get beat up for it and she'll love me, but my wife, you know, I got to, you know, how my wife, oh man, you know, I've been married 27 years. I've been very lucky. And in those 27 years, you know, it's funny, Mike, I always tell the girls, I enjoy this, believe me. It's just such an awkward, weird feeling. But when I walk in a gym and people whisper, I really love it. I love it because they'll go, there's that guy. He's so cocky. Oh. And I say, girls, never confuse confidence with cockiness. You know, and you know, my wife's had to put up with that for 27 years. And, you know, early on in my marriage, you know, I and I'll share this with you, that we got married in 95, I think. Yeah, 95. And in 2002, I quit drinking. I made a life-changing decision one morning. I woke up and I looked myself in the mirror and I decided I'm never going to drink again. And when I walked out of the bathroom, my wife was standing there in our room and she just kind of looked at me and she says, I can't live with you if you're going to continue to drink. And I wasn't one of these guys who was a drunk who was abusive or, you know, it's just overwhelming because you do make bad choices. And, you know, it affected what I felt was important. I think I was spending less time at home.
Right.
I was working in an industry. I through the mid-90s into the early 2000s, I was in the mortgage industry and went through the boom and the bust of it all. And I come from a family in the line of alcoholics, and I wasn't a guy who needed meetings. I didn't go to a meeting because, you know, I called my Uncle Bob and we went to a meeting one time and I went probably for a couple weeks. And then I'm like, you know, I don't really, this isn't something that I need to, I know what I need to stay sober, right? What I needed was two things. I needed to look at myself in the mirror and be disgusted. And then I needed to look at my wife and see the disgust in her face. And if I cared about myself and I cared about my family and I cared about my wife, I was going to quit drinking. And I just chose to go. That was it. And ever since then, I've never had a drink. I've never wanted one.
Wow. And it's amazing.
And I was a guy who probably drank a case a night. And you wouldn't have known it. I wouldn't have. It never affected me. You know. But I also knew that it was a conscious decision of mine because my dad was a drinker and his father was a drinker. I have plenty of family. I believe, you know, alcoholism is a gene that sits in your body and it is hereditary. And I really most importantly made a conscious choice that I wanted to be in my kids' lives. I didn't have that in mind and I wanted to be a better dad. I wanted to be a better husband. And I certainly couldn't do what I'm doing now if I didn't make that choice back then. You know, so there are different people outside of sports who mean the world to me, just, and they don't even know it because of who they are as people. You know, aunts and uncles of mine who I look up to, I don't have to talk to. I have a cousin who actually married my wife's sister. And he's a great guy and a great dad. And lives just in the city next to us. And, you know, I'm really proud of the way he's led his family. I have a brother, Mike, who is one of the greatest guys I've ever met in my life. And out of my eight brothers and sisters, if you asked all of us, who's your favorite brother? Everybody would say Mike. Mike's humble. He's a multimillionaire. He's humble. He's a great father. He's a great husband. He's a great brother. He's a great son. And, you know, I think for me, more importantly, isn't the people who I look up to. I think it's the people who I don't want to let down. And I don't struggle with not drinking. I struggle with being a good person. And I mean that is, I learned later because of a lack of leadership in my life that I had made mistakes that I was lucky to overcome and had some tragic things happen to me, which people, when I tell them my story, they're blown away and they look at me like, that is an absolute movie. And I'm like, well, you only heard probably a quarter of it. And so it's more the people, Mike, that I don't want to let down. And now it's turned into be, there's a group of many people who represent my brand that I don't want to let down, because, you know, it's what's allowed my family to have some success and allowed me to have a greater chance in life.
Those influencers that we all have in our life, I think, are so important. And clearly, you mentioned your wife as that first person, the driving force. I think we've talked to so many coaches that have talked about either A, my wife has been unbelievably supportive and understands kind of what it means to be a coach's wife. And then at the same time, you also have coaches, I think, who we've talked to that have regrets sort of about the way that they approach their job and their relationship with basketball and how that impacted their family. And it's something that, you know, as a guy who's coaching at the high school level and doing all the things you're doing on the AAU side of it, that the amount of time that it takes to invest in the kids, like you talked about, to invest in what you're doing, the amount of time that takes is just, I don't think the average person understands what what that's all about. I just don't think people understand how much time you're putting in to do all the things that you do. And you better have a supportive spouse that's going to enable you to be able to do those kinds of things. Because if you don't have a supportive spouse, it gets really, really difficult really fast. And if your home life's not in order, we all know that adds a whole nother level of stress that I don't think, again, people take that for granted.
Yeah, you carry that weight, right? I mean,
for sure.
I look at it this way. You know, I'm 54 years old. I've grown up on the west side of Cleveland. You know, my family's enormous, just not only in mine, but I'm the oldest of 70 some first cousins on my dad's side. You know, so the McNamara out here is something that's you know, very popular when you run into people. You know, my wife always laughs, God, everywhere we go when we first got married, because everybody, you know, everybody. You know, so for me, it's you're 1,000% right. But when you have, you know, there's certain people, and you know it too, as a player, that, you know, you looked up to, if it was a coach. One of the guys who, there's two men early on in my life, a guy named Pat Mahoney and another guy named Bob Jabo, and they were baseball coaches for me when I was growing up in North Olmsted. And they just cared for me, right? And, you know, my dad wasn't around much, and these two guys took in a role, and they did more for me than, you know, than they should have, you know. And they had a burden to feel like they were helping, you know, guide and raise me. And one of the real regrets and disappointments in my life is I never got to tell them before they passed how much I really loved and appreciated them. And I think about it weekly. I think about those two guys just because, you know, now I'm a dad of five, and I just became a grandfather, and, you know, I'm watching the successes my kids had. But, you know, it's because of guys like them. Coaches mean a lot more, and you and I both know it, than just showing up and being at games. And you're right. The amount of time that I put into everything else, and I put as much time into high school as I do AAU, and you know darn well that at a private school, I'm not making any money in a high school thing. So
you're not putting that money in the bankroll. Come on,
no, man. I don't know what, you know. By the time you get done buying lunches, dinners, donuts in the morning,
a nickel an hour. You think you're at a nickel an hour?
That could be good. The people at Trinity are some pretty wonderful people, but you know, I understand where my role is in the line of who gets paid there. Trust me.
Yeah, I completely understand that. It's funny when you start thinking about just, again, that time that you have to put in and how valuable that time is with your family, how valuable that time is to the kids that you're coaching. And, you know, you talked about the two baseball coaches that guys that had an impact on you and you never really got a chance to say thank you to them. And one of the things that I always think about when it comes to myself, both as a player and then as a coach, is that there's things that I can still remember that coaches that I had at every level, there's still things that I remember that they said to me. Some things were basketball related, some things were life related. And I'm 100% convinced that if I went back and asked those coaches, hey, what about this? Do you remember when you said this to me? I'm sure those coaches have no recollection whatsoever of saying the things that here we are. I haven't been a basketball player for 30 years and I can still remember those quotes, those things that had an impact on me. And so then you flip that around and it makes you think about as a coach or as a teacher, what you say to kids and how careful you have to be and how thoughtful you have to be about the things that you say to them, because you know that they're going to carry those things with them for the rest of their lives. And that can either be in a positive way or, unfortunately, as we all know, that it's very easy for a coach to quickly do a number on a kid, especially when you talk about the youth level. Like, I think about how important it is to have good coaches at that third, fourth, fifth, sixth grade level, where you have guys who are positive, guys who are, and females who are positive and who are good role models and who are building the kids up and teaching them how to have fun and learn the game and just be an influence, not just on their basketball lives, but on their lives off the court. And I think sometimes as coaches, we get so caught up in we want to win this game, or we're caught up in the minutia of today's practice or the next opponent. And it's really hard sometimes to stop, take a deep breath, and reflect. I know I feel that a lot of times as a teacher, where days are just coming at me and kids are saying this and doing that and they're driving you crazy and party is just, oh, you're climbing up the wall. And then you have to stop and you have to remember, like, these kids, they need you, they need us, and the things that you say to them, they're not just going to remember today, but there's going to be some of those things that they remember for the rest of your life. And I think that's a great point that you brought up about those two guys, probably even before they passed away. I mean, they know they had an impact on kids, but they probably had no idea that they had the kind of impact on you that, you know, you talked about.
100%, you know, and that's why the relationships mean everything. I didn't realize when I got into this, the payoffs were going to weddings, going to showers, getting a call, you know, at night because, you know, their boyfriend broke up with them. You know, my wife, when I first started doing this, I was sitting in bed one night and my phone beeped and I rolled over and I, like, 12 o'clock and I start texting back. And of course she looks at me and she's like, who are you texting? Right. And I'm like, you know, I won't mention the girl's name. And I'm like, so-and-so. And she's like, what? I'm like, yeah, her boyfriend broke up with her. She doesn't know what to do. She doesn't want to talk to her mom and dad. You know? And I'm like, you know, so it's all those things that add up, right? And you don't remember, you don't realize it, but that positive influence you had for them to trust you and to feel like you're significant enough to still remain intact and in conversation with them, I had no clue that that was going to be the greatest thing. And now, you know, meeting their husbands and meeting their children. And, you know, I'm fortunate that my daughter was an assistant with me at Trinity for 3 or 4 years. She's in her fourth year now as a head coach. She was Lorain County Coach of the Year, Division I. You know, I how much more luckier can I get, right? I look at it and one son's going to be a fireman, and then my other son graduated. He was captain of the football team in college, and he's, you know, taking a great job. And my other boy is a freshman and going to be a freshman in college. He's going to go play football up at Concordia in Ann Arbor. And then my last one's going to be a seventh grader. And, you know, I have all my nieces and nephews and now my granddaughter. And, you know, I mean, it's of course, we all have bad days and we all have things we think about that we may or may not think is fair, but I'm an extremely lucky man when it comes down to life at this point.
What do you think when you try to reflect upon your ability to build the kind of relationships that you've talked about with some of the kids that have played in your program? What do you think it is about either A, your personality, or B, some of the things that you've done, whether consciously or unconsciously, to be able to build those kinds of relationships? What's been the key or the secret to that success?
I really think you got to talk to them as a person and not, you know, you're not, I get we all have a role of an advisory and as a leader and as an adult, but I want to be able to have a kid look at me sideways a little bit and say, what are you doing? What did you mean by that? Right? I don't think you have to be disrespectful, but you can certainly question things. I want them to feel comfortable that, you know, no question is a bad question. No feeling's a bad feeling. You know, maybe sometimes you say something that you didn't mean, but, you know, when you love somebody and you care for them, you know, you can always come back and, you know, kind of figure it out. The one thing I tell every team before I coach them, and I read this in a book by a guy named, I think it was Fred Edelman, and he coached for the Colts, or he played for the Colts. And he wrote this book, and it said, the one line that always hung with me is, my job as a coach is to love my players. My players' job is to love each other. And I share that with every team. First practice I coach every year. Now, 99% of the kids don't get that, what it means.
Right.
They do when they're done. When they graduate and kids graduate Trinity, right, I always hear them and they'll text me or they'll say things like, coach, I get it. In our family, we have a saying, it says, to be great, you have to do something great. And when my daughter Brittany was playing at O'Leary Catholic and she was her sophomore year and they were beating, they were winning the regional championship game. And the newspaper guy at the time, his name was Bob Daniels out of the Chronicle. And Bob wrote, and Brittany McNamara was dribbling the basketball at half court as the time on the clock wound down by higher and EC advanced to their first, you know, state final game. You know, and Brittany, what were you thinking of at that time? And she said, my dad told me to be great. You have to do something great.
Today that's we did. Awesome. That's
she
awesome.
Said, today we did something great.
That's awesome.
And, right. And so now I have kids who I always share these stories with, and they always text me these things. And today we did something great. My team from last year at Trinity, we won, you know, that was my 100th win. We were two-time conference champions. We won our sectionals. We made it to the district finals, and we were 19-4 in the season. And they gave me a plaque. And it said, Coach Mack, and they all basketball, and they all signed it. Lady Trojans, 2021-22. You said be great, so we were. Right? So
that's awesome.
Mike, but that's when you know you made that impact,
for sure.
Right?
For sure.
And for me, that's what it's about. You know, they don't know as a person what I went through in life. They don't know the history of my family. They don't know the struggles as a man and as a young man of what I went through. They don't know, you know, some of the things that people just hear about me growing up and things that happened to me in high school, self-inflicted, not self-inflicted, that and they're looking at me like, man, I've had people look straight me in the eye and say, how did you make it? And you know, again, it's the greater testimonial to what is right and what we're doing right as a family and how we're going to continue to lead.
I think what is the most gratifying about what you just said is the fact that here you have something that you shared with your kids. And obviously as parents and as coaches, we try to share things that we think will have an impact in a positive way on the kids that we're in contact with. Obviously we have a lot more contact with our own kids as parents, but as coaches, we spend a tremendous amount of time with the kids who are a part of our programs. And I think when you hear a kid who has taken something that you've said to them and internalized it, and then
Right. They're
willing to share it and say it and live it. I mean, there's really nothing that could be more meaningful. I know there's a lot of things that I'll say probably more so to my own kids than necessarily to the players that I'm talking about, because I'm just spending more time with my kids, and I'll make them read a book and we'll read it out loud and we'll talk about what it means. And they're like, Dad, do we have to do the book study again? Come on. And, you know, but you're doing those things and you're sharing, and not, you know, not every message gets through, but then at times there will be something that kicks in and you're like, oh man, like they did actually hear me. They did actually take it to heart. And when those things happen, I mean, those are the moments that as a parent or a coach,
just send chills down your back that you're just like, man, we are getting through to them. We are having an impact. Because sometimes it's easy to forget that you're having a huge impact in the day-to-day minutia, especially I'm sure as a high school coach, probably even more so than on the AAU side of it, that, you know, there's times where you feel like, man, am I appreciated? Am I getting through to these kids? Are they really buying into what I'm saying? Because it's just, again, it's a difficult job. It's tough. And everybody wants a PCU. There's probably no more criticized job in America than high school basketball coaches. Nobody's sitting at the dentist's office telling the dentist what to do or how to do their job, but yet everybody thinks they can coach a high school basketball team. And so sometimes you just forget that you are having a tremendous impact, even on days where it doesn't always feel like it.
Yeah, no, and I agree. And sometimes, and you and I both know, the parents make that difficult, and you just got to, you know, understand and believe in what you're doing, and you just kind of move forward from there.
Your first impression is everything when applying for a new coaching job. A professional coaching portfolio is the tool that highlights your coaching achievements and philosophies, and most of all, helps separate you and your abilities from the other applicants. The Coaching Portfolio Guide is an instructional membership-based website that helps you develop a personalized portfolio. Each section of the Portfolio Guide provides detailed instructions on how to organize your portfolio in a professional manner. The guide also provides sample documents for each section of your portfolio that you can copy, modify, and add to your personal portfolio. As a Hoopheads Pod listener, you can get your Coaching Portfolio Guide for just $25. Visit coachingportfolioguide.com/hoopheads to learn more.
Let's talk a little bit about your road to high school coaching and what that has been like for you. Tell us a little bit about how the job at Trinity comes across your desk and why you decided to take that particular job and just what you've enjoyed about it.
Yeah, I think so. It was funny. I was years ago, I'd helped Al Malkarik, a guy who was out at Avon, and Al, great guy, and did some scouting for him and kind of got me involved. And I always thought, man, one day I want to get, you know, into coaching high school. Cause I was coaching some football, and, you know, that was my first love and probably still is, you know, and because my son's just really got done playing in high school, I'm thinking about maybe going back and coaching a little bit of high school somewhere. But, you know, I got into it. My friend, Mike Barnes, I coached his daughter, and they lived in Kenston, and he was the director of human resources for Mayfield City Schools. And when Tony Ware, who was there 20-some years, resigned, they were looking for a guy. They couldn't find. They didn't get the right applicants. Mike asked me if I'd apply. He said, you know, it's probably a one-year job, just a Band-Aid, until we can maybe find, you know, because it's a 35, 40-minute ride for me from where we live.
Right.
And in the snow, it became an hour and 10-minute ride, you know. But, you know, I went out there and I learned a lot, and I learned how to deal with, you know, some different people. And I wasn't in that basketball high school world. So adhering to rules, you know, sometimes I like to play in my own sandbox, and, you know, having to deal with rules, man, I just, you know, maybe it's not my cup of tea. Right. So I was there a year, and the day after I had left Mayfield, I happened to get a call and said, hey, Trinity job opened up. Would you be interested in talking to him? And I'm like, you know, I just kind of looked up, and they hadn't been doing well. And they actually had 6 coaches in the last 4 years at the time. And I thought, man. And then it kind of hit me, and I said, all right, you know, I'm going to go talk to him. I thought Trinity was that school, right? The best of the best. Vonda Ward, Samika Randall, Nishima Hillman, Kayla Jones, you know, just the best of the best went there, right? And I thought, man, wouldn't it be something if you could kind of revive that program? So I went in the morning. it was really a classic move. I went in at 10 o'clock interview. I left at 3 o'clock. The AD, I did 3 interviews in one day. The AD wouldn't let me leave. And by the time the day was over, he put a contract in front of me. And he said, we need a guy like you with an AAU background who can help bring some kids in.
We need some stability in the program. We need a little bit of mature leadership. You're really exactly what we're looking for. You know, what do you think? And I thought, oh, wow. I mean, I wasn't really anticipating anything, right?
You're like I am?
Right. Okay, man. That's what you think I am. Great. I must have done a great job of selling you.
That's funny.
So I ended up the day later taking a job and, inherited, again, responsibilities that I wasn't aware, because I don't know anybody on that side of town, right? When you live on the west side, you don't cross 77.
Yeah, exactly.
Right? You know?
That's a whole other world.
Yeah, I'm hearing about St. Barnabas and St. Benedict. I don't know those schools. I know St. Richard's and Rayfield's and St. Clarence. And, I'm like, I don't know who you guys are. St. Joseph and John's. I don't, and now I'm getting kids, although because of my AAU experience, parents had known who I was, and we started to get a little influx. And we had a bad year my second year, and in my third year, we started to kind of take an uptick. And then the last 4 years, we won, like I said, two conference championships. And just in those last 4 years, I probably won, 60 games or, average 15 wins a season. The principal is a woman named Linda Baccio, one of the most fantastic people I've ever met in my life. And she's standing there with the athletic director. We were playing Villa Angela St. Joe's, who at the time was pretty good. And we ended up losing by 4. And as I'm walking off the court, we shook hands. I'm walking off the court, and they're looking at me, and I'm thinking, oh, great, here we go, right? They're not happy. And she just stopped me, and she just looked at me, and she's a tiny lady, and she just said, that's an unbelievable job you're doing with that team. And my athletic director just kind of, she walked away and he smiled at me. He goes, Mac, really? You put effort into every play. You're coaching constantly. Your style, look, man, it's aggressive. You're loud, but you're positive. And it's really refreshing to continue to watch you have passion for the game. And I just kind of looked at him and said, man, I'm doing it with all smoke and mirrors because we don't got much here to work, And but it was greatly appreciated. And I don't know how much longer I stay at Trinity. I can tell you this, they're wonderful people. It's truly an administration who cares about their students. I've seen firsthand people go out of their way, and they got a bad rap because of some things that had happened in transitioning of the school. And, so I don't know how Trinity all of a sudden got that bad rap, but, I was incredibly proud the last 2 years to put the last two conference championships up on the wall. The last one hadn't happened in maybe 17, I don't know, a long time, 18 years. And, I always told the girls when that happened, I said, that's your legacy forever. This is your school. When you come back in here, that'll always be up on the wall. That number represents you and what you did here. And it is forever going to be yours. And it's something that I'm really proud of to help kind of, bring back and turn the corner over there at Trinity.
What do you remember in terms of being the most surprising thing about being a high school head coach? Something that when you think back to before taking the job, something that maybe you didn't realize or you didn't think was going to be as big of a part of that job as you thought?
I think that the school tradition and pride was something that I bought into, right? I feel, I've been there 7 years, and I believe I didn't go to school there, but I believe that I have a part of Trinity Trojan, and the families, right? It goes back to the relationships. A lot of these things go back to the relationships for me because it's these people who look you in the eye and maybe not trust because of where Trinity was and, kind of the, oh, we always lose. And, I'm that confident. No, that ain't, it's not going to happen much longer. And then, the right pieces, parts come in. But I think that I never realized that, the more and more I learned about, through the administrators and some of the guys and teachers who were there and the kids who were going to school there because their parents had went there, that, that alumni base and, part of the Trinity family, I didn't expect that. And it means a lot. I think that, if my time today was done at Trinity,
that I have some wonderful friends and some great people that I've been able to learn from, meet, and teach me about a school that, I didn't know much about, and I'm proud to say that I was there.
We've talked a little bit about the amount of time it takes to be successful as a high school coach. So to give some people out there just an idea of how much time you put in, maybe take us through just – maybe we go spring, summer, fall, winter, kind of what you're doing in each of those seasons, just to give people an idea how much time you're putting in.
Yeah, I mean, August is really the downtime, right? High school, right. You're not allowed now. I mean, last year with COVID, you could, but now there's no touch in August. So it kind of changes. For me, August is going to be, let's say that's the start month, September. In September, there's a lot of, I go back to the dad part of me. I want my kids to play everything. I don't want them to be, my son is a football player. He was on the Fairview basketball team. He was a starting pitcher on the baseball team. You know, he's a center fielder. I want him to have the greatest high school experience he can have. So for us, our fall league is involved on just Sundays, nothing during the week. If kids want to get in and work out that aren't playing or want to get some extra time, we create some time for them. Fall league comes and, you know, we take about 8 hours a day in fall league every Sunday in September and October. September and October all are for high school, start the open gym period, the lifting period. So you're spending a couple hours, a week, maybe anywhere from 4 to 8 hours a week there. You know, it's really what you're doing outside of it. Practice planning, schedules, uniforms, practice shirts, practice jerseys, schedules on, my schedule for September and October is done in August. My schedule for October, November, December is done in September, you know, so you're constantly trying to work forward, aligning yourself with the high school boys coach, because at Trinity, we got one gym and four hoops. There isn't anywhere else we can share to prep, you know? Yep. So, you know, man, it's a lot of everybody's got to be on the same page, aligning yourself with your AD. And in all that time, while the season hasn't started yet, now is really when we're aligning up our teams for our next AAU season in September now. September and October have really become when you're setting your top teams up for the next season. So if it's workouts, if it's tryouts, if it's the fall league, you know, it's that constant activity to go in there. When you get into high school, I'll tell my girls, and if we are looking in at a high school day, we'll get to school about 2 o'clock. Let's say I'll leave there maybe at 10 o'clock after the game's over. I'll go home. I'll watch the film for the first time and stat it, because I don't trust Huddle or anyone else to stat the film. So I have to watch the game and stat it, and I'll mark it up at the same time. The second time I'll watch it that night is to watch what my markings were and correct anything that I have to in my notes for practice coming up. And then the next thing I'll do that same night is watch my next opponent. And then when I get up in the morning, I will watch the next opponent again and make sure my scout's going right to prep for practice the next day. So I usually get to bed game night somewhere between 2 and 3 o'clock, and then just preparing yourself the right way, and then in practices that same way. I'm not one of these high school coaches that believe that we need to practice 4 hours a day. In the beginning of practice in November and December, we might go 2 hours. Once we hit Christmas, we're an hour and a half at the most. I typically give my teams off Monday. If we play Saturday, we're taking Sunday and Monday off to make sure that they got their schedules and school right. We practiced enough. We don't have to do anything as long as we're watching film, prepping for our opponents. It's our second time through conference, so we've seen who we played already. You know, that part of preparation kind of goes away. We spend more time in film and just skill work than we do in installation and other things that aren't necessary. Some coaches think they're going to stay in there from 3 o'clock till 5:30, 6 o'clock. No way. That's crazy. You're going to wear these kids out. They're going to hate the game. They're going to hit a wall, and they're not going to perform in the second half. So that holds true in my schedule all the way until we lose. And then, man, it's a matter of collecting uniforms, doing exit interviews, talking to your AD, setting your schedule for the next year. You have 30 days off. You get in. When January hits for me. Now we're in AAU planning period. I've got to make sure we're getting all our schedules for gyms done. We're getting our uniforms. We'll spend, and this year we bought 500 and some pairs of sets of uniforms, right? We did 11 gyms of practice in. I've got to get certification on my high school coaches that are going to go on the NCAA events. I've got to get my player certification. The list is never ending, you know, but, you know, Mike, I believe this, and people say it all the time. I've never worked a day in my life basketball because I get to go to work in the t-shirts and shorts and shoes. You know, I'm a basketball coach. It's one of the greatest payoffs I've ever had. My dad worked. He was a construction guy for 40 years. His hands are like concrete blocks. He went to work at 6 a.m., came home at 5, went to bed, and you never saw him, but he had to work 12 hours a day in a real job doing real manual labor. And I haven't, and when I've been coaching, worked a day in my life because I don't see this as work. It's truly the greatest payoff I've ever had.
Getting to go to work in shorts and a t-shirt is a pretty good deal. I will say that I spent the first, I think, 19 years, 18 years of my career teaching in the classroom. And I taught third grade and I taught fifth grade. And then I just had an opportunity to go, this is probably now, I guess, 7 or 8 years ago, 9 years ago. I can't keep track anymore. But I had an opportunity to switch and go teaching the gym, and man, what a change to be able to put on shorts and a t-shirt and go to work. There is nothing better than that. It is definitely a perk. You talked a little bit about the film work that you do. What's your philosophy on sharing film with your players in terms of how much do you show to them? And then two, how much do you balance or how do you balance showing them things that they've done well versus showing them things that where they made an error that you want them to fix? So how do you balance that? I don't know if you want to call it positive and negative when you're sharing it with the players.
You know, I think a lot of the for me in the film work is just recognizing, you know, the space and the concept of what we're in. And I think for us, it's, you know, a lot of the girls aren't the AAU players, right? So let's say half your team is filled with kids who are looking to play at the next level. Basketball is their number one sport. But the majority of them maybe just be kids who are, like my son, right? He was playing because he was a good athlete and he enjoyed the game. And maybe they don't understand it as well as that atypical star that you have in your team these days, right? Cal understands the game much greater than kids who don't play AAU at the level that he plays, because for him, when he gets to high school, the game probably slows down a little bit because of who those guys play.
Right, for sure. Absolutely. You
know? So you're really teaching two different levels when we're into it. So for me, I'm just trying to teach the concept, right? I just want them to understand, you know, this is where I want you to be when this happens, and hopefully on the court it clicks. And then when we're watching our opponent, I'm drawing up what their tendencies are, right? In girls basketball, the easiest thing to do, and it almost gets crazy to listen to in games, make her go left. Parents ask me all the time, you know, what do I got to do to make my daughter a better, you know, better player? Have her handle the ball better and get her in the gym. And I don't mean with a trainer. I don't mean with that. I mean, there's got to be a fine marriage of skill work with somebody who knows what they're doing. People like MAQ or Method or T3, who are the speed and strength kind of leaders. And then, you know, the time on the floor playing. There's got to be that marriage. You know, some guys, oh, train. Bull crap. Oh, I'm just going to let her play. You're nuts. You know, the biggest thing for girls is preventing yourself from injury. And it's everybody. I understand that. But girls with their hips and their knees are a greater concern. And I share with parents all the time. They think I'm crazy because a dad will come up to me and go, I need to get her in the gym 4 days of work a week with you. No. You know, I'll see her on Tuesdays. I want you to sign her up here and get her to work on her explosion, her band work, her box jumps, her strength in her hips, her strength in her knees, and you'll find she's going to become a better player that way.
Yeah, it's interesting when you think about, this goes back to sort of the difference in the system, right? Like your speed and strength training and my speed and strength training. Like I did some stuff because my dad taught exercise physiology at Cleveland State, so he was strapping me to the back of a car and a motorcycle and towing me along and building these contraptions in the garage and doing plyometrics. None of it helped me because I still was never able to jump, but probably got me in better shape. But I never jumped any higher or ran any faster as a result of it. But nonetheless, I was doing all that crazy stuff. But I was also running through my neighbor's backyards. I was also climbing fences. I was also jumping down from trees and all these things. And so I think when you look at the speed and strength stuff, so much of that is things that a lot of kids back when you and I were growing up, you kind of had all these different athletic movements because, again, you were playing all kinds of sports. You didn't have the specialization that where you have today. And so I think there's – at first, when I know when speed, strength, agility training first sort of came on the scene, which is probably now, I don't know, 8 to 10 years ago maybe, where you started to see those first things pop up. I remember going and I'd be in the gym like working with a kid on their basketball and I'd see like these 8-year-olds doing – speed training and they'd be doing all the different movements and things that they do. And I remember just walking out of there going, I can't believe somebody's paying for that. Like I just, it's like, it's insane to me. And then over the last 5, 6, 7 years, you started to really think about, well, what is it that they're doing? And I really feel like in a lot of ways, they're replacing some of the things that kids just did on their own when they were out running around and playing. And I think there's, as you said, I think there's a tremendous need for that ability to just boost your athleticism and how much that can make you a better player. And I think especially on the girl side, what's interesting to me is you think about a girl who grew up in the area when you or I grew up and the opportunities that girls had back then to do anything. There was nothing. And now you look at the opportunities that female basketball players have to be able to play on the types of teams they get an opportunity to play on now. And just the speed, strength training and the ability to get in a gym and be able to find games to play against other girls. It's just the explosion of girls basketball from that standpoint. I think there's no question that it's been a huge, huge positive on the girls side of things.
Right. Yeah, no doubt about it. And it's changed the game. And that's where girls basketball has gotten so much better.
Yeah, it absolutely has. I don't think there's any question about that just because of, again, the opportunities that are being provided. When you're thinking about designing a practice for your high school team, what's your philosophy when you're drawing up a practice plan? Are you putting together a plan that looks pretty similar each day in terms of breakdowns of offense and defense, types of drills you do, or is it more just, hey, I'm trying to look at my team and figure out what they need day to day? What's your thought process on putting together a practice plan?
Yeah, I think for me, the definitive answer is I treat my high school team just like my AAU teams when we get in there. I feel one of the differences in our club is we focus a ton on development. And my philosophy is speed and space. I want to go from point A to B as fast as I can go and be able to run, catch, and dribble, quick motion, and to defend the same way. So that they recognize the faster we play confuses the other team. And so for us, it's being able to move with and without the ball, either transition drills, the 11-man game, a passing, sideline passing drills, so that they're running and catching. And a lot of times you never have the ball touch the floor kind of mentality. And for us, it gets the kids to play in that mindset to, hey, move the ball. It's not a me show. We're not going to hold it, pound it, isolate. You know, it's the college men's and the college pro game turns into isolation basketball, where that's why people love the WNBA and the women's college, because, it's the team concept. When you watch Gino Auriemma run chins and the Princeton sets, and, you watch some of these guys and the way that they set up the zippers and the double screens, if it's off of a horns look, it's just so many different concepts for us. Again, because it's relatively different, I'll change our half court sets to kind of, I don't want to say dumb it down, but to make it easier for those kids who don't play a lot of basketball. And then when we get into AAU, I really enforce the kids to say, look, we're going to spend 45 minutes every practice working on ball handling, and running speed and space, and it'll help you overall play that up-tempo game that we're looking to play, and it's truly what it is for me, and really on both sides of it. I'm not going to sit down there and identify X player's weakness and say, okay, I've got to get to her and we're going to have this practice, because again, you got to remember, I've got really two working hoops at Trinity. You know,
and you can't. You can't be like, hey, all right, everybody, grab a partner, go grab a hoop by yourselves, right?
Man, right? I would love to say, hey, we're going to do Mikens for, you know, and then we're going to go into, you know, partner floaters, and we're going to go into reverse Mikens, and can't do it. You know, everybody's going to form shoot, and look, I can't do it. I would love to, but it's just not the cards that I'm dealt. So, you know. And people tell me all the time when they come into Trinity and they see what we're dealing with, and they're like, man, how do you do it? Yeah, I get it. But you adapt and you move on, and it's still basketball. And, you know, luckily you get girls who buy in and smart kids, and, you know, we figure it out.
Yeah, you got to figure it out. You got to see what's put in front of you and then make the best of it and try to identify what it is that you can and what it is that you can't do. And then move forward. And that's really what it's all about. I think when you talk about having success in coaching, right, it's the ability to make adjustments, to look at the kids you have, to look at what your team needs and figure it out. What's the style of play that's going to benefit us with this particular group of players? And how do we get the most out of each individual kid? And that's something that, again, has been a theme, I think, Kevin, that's run through the podcast, is the number of coaches that we've talked to. I'd say, especially in the last year, it feels like a lot of coaches are talking to us about the fact that, you know, it used to be probably, again, in the era where you or I grew up, where it was the coach has his philosophy and everybody on the team either adapts to that philosophy or things aren't going to go very well for you. And now it's almost the exact opposite, where the coach almost has to have 14 different philosophies to deal with each one of the players. And you talked about over and over again tonight how important the relationships are to you when it comes to coaching your team. And so in order for you to be able to do that, in order for you to be able to adapt to each kid, you got to understand each kid. And to understand them, you got to go and have those relationships and build them. And I think one of the questions that I think is always interesting to ask somebody, whether it's from a high school coaching perspective or particularly on the AAU side or somebody who's running a basketball organization, when it's just you and you're coaching your team and you can obviously share your philosophy and you can do the things that you believe in. But then as your organization grows, you can't coach 53 teams. So you've got to find other coaches. So what was that process like for you when you first sort of had to delegate or give up control of, okay, I'm going to have somebody else coach a team that's under my umbrella? How do you make sure that obviously the person's not going to be a clone of you and do things exactly the same way that you do, but in order for you to make sure that they understood the mission that you had and sort of your vision and your value statements, how did you make sure that the coaches that you're bringing into your organization are fitting into the philosophy and the things that you want to do?
You know, that's where I got lucky. And what I mean by this is I got guys like Izzy Santiago, Kevin Broughton, right? I got guys like Todd Simon. I got guys like Joe Gardner and Corbin Baum, who are great men and really have my back. You know, there's a trust that's there, and that you align yourself that same way. Now, what I think, you know, the guys like they have an instant credibility, right? And they bought into the culture. And I think that's really where, you know, we implanted it and started from there, because you're right. I don't want them to do things like I do. The only thing that I ask my coaches, and it's what I tell every one of my parents that I can ever have a conversation with, is our families, Mike Klinzing, paid to be a member of MAC Basketball. We have to provide a service that provides value for the financial amount that they put in. Now, we don't promise anyone anything, right? We're going to promise that, you know, you're going to be where we're going to be, where we said we're going to be. We're going to put together good practices, and we're going to work together as a group to try to build a team. And at the end of it, as a consumer, you're going to sit down there and say, as a family, did that check that I wrote, did it have value, and did I gain something out of the season? It doesn't have anything to do with wins and losses. What I want Cal to do is be a better basketball player than when he came on board in March. That's the only goal that I tell our coaches. If we lose every game, which, look, I'm as competitive as anybody. I want to win at everything I do. And so when we walk on the court, you're damn right that I'm going to compete to win, but it doesn't happen every time.
Now, at the end of the year, if I can look at my parents and feel that I did not, or I did what I said I was going to do, and I provided value, and that's what I have to get to my coaches to understand. They get frustrated. Oh, she didn't show up, and so didn't show up, and we didn't play well, blah, 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 blah. Okay, but, you know, how was the rest of the team? Oh, they were great. You know, parents love it. Blah, blah, blah. Great. I don't care. Right? I want to win. I want to compete. But, you know, it goes back to the Mike Elder thing. I want the worst player on the team to have the same experience as the best player. And it's all perception.
Yeah, that's a great way to look at it for any coach, whether it's the high school level, whether it's in an AAU organization. If you can give everybody on your team a really good experience. And so that goes back to those relationships, right? Because if a kid doesn't feel valued as the ninth or 10th player on an AAU team, or they don't feel valued as the 11th or 12th player on a varsity basketball team, it's really easy. And you and I both know that very quickly that could turn into a problem where the kid within the locker room, within the practice setting, is grumbling and is causing problems. And then take it another step further, the parent, the family is causing problems. And it really comes down to, you have to make sure that you invest in not only those kids who are on the floor that are helping you win games because of their scoring, because of their rebounding, because of their defense, but also those kids who are providing the back end culture and the practice effort and all the things that goes into making your reserve unit as important as that starting unit. It's not always easy to do that as a coach, no. And especially when you get caught up in, like, hey, day to day, as you said it, look, coaches, there's not a coach that I know that isn't competitive and doesn't want to win every game. And so sometimes you get caught up in that. And it's easy to say, oh, I kind of forgot about player 11 and 12. But as a coach, you have to be really conscious of how you're interacting with those players and the experience that you're providing to them in order to, as you said, make sure that no matter who you are on that team, that you're getting a positive experience.
Yeah, because you know what it is, Mike, as a person who leads young people, we want them to look in your eye like, man, I'm working hard, and acknowledge it, understand that I'm trying. And that payoff as a mentor, coach, leader, you know, between you and the kid could be one thing, but the parent can walk away and think, oh, he hates my daughter, he don't play her, right, you know, right. She doesn't get the ball, he's telling him not to pass it to her. And you're like, oh, come on, man, give me a break, you know, please. I wish I had that much control in the way it was, you know. Oh, my daughter's just as good as her, she should have gotten that scholarship. Look, it's not up to me who gets a scholarship. I'm not the one choosing, right? My job as a guy is to set the table. Your kid's job is to eat. So if we're putting them in the right spot, you know, that's what it is. Our girls are really fortunate. We play in a circuit called Select 40. There isn't nothing like it, unless you get into the Nike EYBL and the U Under Armour stuff. There isn't nothing like it. We were in Spooky Nook in April, and my 23 team probably averaged 30 to 35 coaches at a game. My 24 team averaged, oh gosh, I would think anywhere between 20 to 25 coaches a game. And they're fortunate that they get to sit in front of this audience. And sometimes parents are blown away going, man, I can't believe we're here. We're playing? Like, holy crap, right? Look who was here. And then the other ones are going, well, how come she didn't get an offer after that game? Well, because she stunk. Right. Oh, she was awesome. No. She stunk. You know, and you're like, I mean, they look, and it's so hard because parents are emotional. And as coaches, we care about them all. And of course, we have kids that we're closer to, and we have people that we align ourselves with. But in the end, the reality of it is, you know, I want every kid who's with me to have that great experience in high school or in AAU. It's just not a bunch of smoke, man. I just don't deal with it that way. I want a kid walk up to me, give me a hug, high five, you know, Coach Mack, that smile, right? Know I'm going to say something sarcastic or cocky or kind of off the wall goofy with them, where we can kind of, you know, and it alleviates and brings us back into that spot. We're going, man, I remember when I could look sideways at you a little bit and you let me kind of be me. And that's what it's about, right? I went to a game, and I don't mean to kind of go off on this, but I went on that, and it just kind of popped into my mind. I haven't thought of it in a while. I went to a Magnificat game. They were playing Solon. This was probably 2015 or 16. And there was a girl who played at Mags. Her name was Sarah Skelza. And Sarah was a good high school player, you know, role for Mags, typical.
you know, really good basketball grinder. Dad was, you know, an athlete, right? West Side kid. And they were playing Solon, and it was an exciting game, and Solon had a great team, and Mags called a timeout, Solon called a timeout, Mags went on a run, and Sarah hit a big three, and as she was coming to the bench, her team's pushing her around, and for whatever reason, about 15 feet away from the bench as she crossed half court, her eyes locked into mine. And while her team's pushing her and they're going crazy, she gave me this most intense stare of like, F, yeah, man, this is what, right? You and me, man, right?
That's awesome.
And all the way till she went to the bench and we kept locked in, and I'm ready to run through a wall, right? And that's the moment, right? That's what it's about. And for me, I have a greater appreciation because of what, you know, I've gone through in my life and some of the twists and turns that I've had and how much I appreciate things. And I certainly, I don't take them for granted anymore, but the moments are what it's all about.
Yeah. Being able to create those kinds of moments for kids. And when you see them come through and be able to have success again, whether that's your own kid as a parent, or whether that's a kid that you're coaching in the moment, or a kid that you've coached previously that you're watching playing in some other environment. I think that's one of the most satisfying things you can have as either a parent or a coach, is just to be able to watch somebody's success that maybe you had some small part in what that success was all about. One of the things I'm sure that people understand about your role as an AAU director and as an AAU coach is your ability to help impact kids' opportunities to get exposure and to be able to earn a college scholarship or to be able to get an opportunity to play college basketball at a whatever level. So over the course of your time as the director of MAC basketball, how have you gone about building those relationships with college coaches? What's that process look like for you, and just how have you gone about doing that?
Yeah, well, I really think it's got to be proofs in the pudding, right? I mean, it used to be, who are you? You know, what club do they play for? And now I get 15 to 20 calls a year going, hey, Mac, I got a call from, you know, this guy at AAU group, or I got film from a coach, and can she play here? And, you know, and look, you build a reputation of being straightforward. You build a reputation of not blowing smoke up somebody's ass about, you know, who kids are and what they are. And you give them a realistic viewpoint of life, of effort. Can they provide collegiate effort? Can they provide it as a Division I, II? Can they play? Ultimately, I don't have the say or the influence to get a kid a scholarship. But I think over reputation and time, now it's the brand. People follow MAC basketball. When they walk past the court, they'll stop and be like, oh, okay. And if they see, you know, certain coaches on a court with teams, they'll associate them with scholarship-driven teams. All nine of our girls on our 23 team this year will have scholarships. In our 24 team, we have three Division I already offered. So I think it comes down to now people affiliate the brand with the next level player. And, you know, then it's the relationships, right? You have a great relationship with the guy who coaches at Kent, and then they move up the ladder and take a job at Cincinnati. And then you build a relationship with that staff, and then it goes to Xavier, then it goes to Valparaiso and, you know, Loyola. And then now you have kids who, you know, I've been fortunate enough to have kids in most every conference that's in America. Now, I'm also, look, can I call Gino Auriemma? He's going to pick him up. No, he don't have my number. I don't have his. You know, I don't have a kid who play at UConn. You know what? There are, and I try to be nice about it, there are idiots around here telling people that, yeah, you can go. No, you can't. You know? I mean,
Let me ask you this. How frustrating is that? Because I think one of the things that you see a lot, and you see it all over, you see it with boys, you see it with girls, is the number of people who are telling families and telling kids things that are completely and totally just ridiculous in terms of the levels that they can play at. And so you end up setting this expectation of, hey, this kid, somebody's been telling them that they're a Division I player since they're in eighth grade, and yet it's not the reality. And I think you're doing such a disservice because you set these unreasonable expectations of people saying, well, this person can do that. And I think that sometimes what you have to really do, right, is you've talked about it. You got to stand on the truth. And if you always stand on the truth, then that's when you're really going to get coaches to trust you. When you tell a college coach that everybody that you see is great, or you're telling all these kids, hey, right, you can do this, right? You're in seventh grade and I already know, hey, man, you're going to do this and that. Like, I crack up when I hear about some of that stuff, because it's just people don't have an understanding, especially parents. And I think players probably fall into this too, but I think parents even more so, that they have no concept at all of how good you have to be to play at any level of college basketball. Like, obviously you see a lot where everybody thinks about Division I schools because that's who's on TV and that's who everybody knows. And so they tend to look at, it's Division II or it's Division III. But people have no concept of how good you have to be to play college basketball. They have none.
I always share this. When a girl gets an offer, I just had a girl the other day got an offer, or about a month ago, and I always say to them, congratulations, you're in the 2%. 2% of all, less than 2% of all girls who play basketball play Division I basketball. So think about that. Numerically, over the number of females in the United States of America, the greatest nation in the world, you are the 2%. It's unbelievable, right? Now, parents don't understand that on their way in fifth grade when little Susie scored 23 in a rec game and somebody tells her, like, oh, man, you're the best kid I've ever seen. Yeah, until you go to the next gym and there's a kid who's better than you, and then it's all about size, speed, and development along the way. It has nothing to do with what it is. So, it's frustrating because, parents always say, or I'll get a high school coach go, oh, how you must have got her that scholarship. No, she played for me. She earned that scholarship. Well, she's not as good as so-and-so, and so-and-so didn't get one. That's your opinion. You're a high school coach. You've never had anybody recruited in your life. You never played at that level. How would you know what that level is, right? I never played at that level, but because I've put hundreds of girls into college basketball players, it affords me the opportunity of experience to have a better idea of who can play at that level.
Well, and obviously, right, it comes down to the coaching staff. And if the coaching staff believes that the player can play at that level, that's really honestly the most important thing. Because, look, there's kids out there that some coaching staff takes a chance on because they like some aspect of that player's game or their personality or whatever it is. There's something about a kid that they believe in. And maybe there's nobody else out there that believes in it. But all it takes is one staff to believe in that kid to give them an opportunity. And then it's up to, obviously, the kid to take advantage of that or not take advantage of it as time moves on. But, yeah, for somebody who's kind of on the outskirts of it to criticize somebody, or, again, to tell a kid that, hey, you're this or you're that, I think you see it so often that we're doing kids a disservice by not telling them the honest truth of what we believe.
For sure. And that's the frustrating part whereas people in this industry, and, people always think there's a guy who works at an opposing club and been around the game a long time. Carlos is his name for Smack, right? And people think Lois and I, are mortal enemies. Now, look, I think the world of Lois. I think he is done phenomenal things in the girls' game. Is he a competitor? Absolutely. Is Lois and I going to sit down and break bread for breakfast tomorrow morning? Nope. Are Lois and I, when we see each other, give each other a hello and a five and a handshake and a hey, how are you? Hope you're well. How's things? Yep, absolutely we will. We have a mutual respect I'd like to feel between each other. But Lois is also one of those guys who, he gets those phone calls and he gets those calls too. And we talk more than people realize and have that common experience with players, parents, and their unrealistic expectations about who their kids are in basketball. And some people are great. Some get it. And some really believe that it happens, that's probably one of the more frustrating parts.
I can only imagine, especially when you're dealing with the number of kids that you're dealing with and you're dealing with parents. And again, when people join and they sign up to be a part of an AAU club, and then they start thinking about, well, this is going to lead to that. And I always maintain that one of the things that I think is a shame about where we are today sometimes with basketball is that kids don't stop and enjoy the moment that they're in, whether that's, hey, this AAU season or this high school season or this middle school season or this fifth grade season, because they're always worried about what's coming next, whether that's, hey, am I going to be a starter next year? Am I going to make the middle school team? And am I going to be on the varsity next year? Am I going to be a college player? Am I going to get a scholarship? And so often they're looking so far ahead that they don't stop and be like, hey, I should just enjoy being a high school basketball player, right? Because sometimes you look back and those are some of the best moments of your life. And if you're always looking ahead and not enjoying the moment, I think you're missing out on a lot of great things. And I think parents sometimes push their kids in that direction and get them more focused on what's next instead of being worried about, hey, just enjoy what's right in front of you and try to maximize that by putting in the most effort that you can. I mean, I know you've talked to huge numbers of people, and so have I, that they look back and they're like, man, if I just would have worked a little harder, I just would have concentrated a little bit more, or I just would have overlooked such and such just so I could go back and have a better or more enjoyable high school experience. There's a lot of people, I think, that look back and have regrets just because they were focused on the wrong things when they were in high school.
Oh, 1,000,000%, right? I mean, if we could, you know, we could all go back and get a redo. But the one thing is, you know, and again, now we sit down and share, because my high school teams, right, they're going into, and same thing, you know, with all these boys in the 23 class, they're going in their last recruiting cycle.
Right.
And I'm looking at them going, look, the clock's ticking and this is almost over. You have 15 games left in your AAU career. You know, we have coaches who are coming. You know, have you done everything you can mentally and physically to be ready for this moment? Right? That's what it comes down to.
That's absolutely what it comes down to. And like you said, you have kids that, whether they're part of your high school program or they're part of your AAU program, you try to provide that framework. You try to put them in the right position to be able to showcase what it is that they can do. And then ultimately it's up to them, right? It's all up to them how hard they work off the floor. It's how hard they work during practice. And then how do they perform in games? And as you've said numerous times, it's not you getting them a scholarship. It's them earning that. And you play a small part in that by providing an opportunity for them to get exposure and for them to play with you, whether it's on your high school team or play for the AAU club. And you're just giving them that ability to get themselves out in front of coaches and to be able to show what they can't do, but what they can do. And ultimately it's not whether Kevin McNamara can get them a scholarship. It's whether or not they're going to take advantage of the opportunities that are put in front of them.
Yeah. They're trusting that, you know, the alumni and the people who wore the jersey before them have represented the brand to make it somewhere that coaches see, they know that there's quality coming out of. And so it'll provide them that opportunity for people to sit down and watch them. And that's all we can ask for, is that opportunity. And really, at the level that we're playing and our top teams are playing and paying to be at, they've got to perform. And we don't know if they will. And we're hopeful. But in the end, it's really important for them to realize it's a fleeting moment. They've got to take it for granted. You know, they got to go and get it while it's there. You know, I'm one of these guys that I'm going to look him in the eye and I'm going to give him the greatest speech. And man, we're going arm in arm. We're locking in. We're going to run through that wall together. If we bounce off it, we're getting back up. We're going right through it again, right? I'm going to hold your hand. When you cry, I cry. I'm going to pick you up. I'm going to carry you through. Look, every mistake you make, I'm going to live it with you. And then we're going to celebrate that success together. That's what people have to buy into. Because again, competition creates those moments in life for us, which we'll forever remember, you know, in high school, cutting down the net, in these NCAA exposure opportunities, playing against, you know, we played against Brittany Griner back in the day. You know, I can promise you every girl on our team remembers playing against Brittany Griner.
For sure.
Right?
Yeah.
And those are what we didn't mention one time in AAU who you beat or what trophy you won or some BS 500 different national championships. And I'm going to win the silver division champ. You know what?
Yep.
That's great. I got to be honest. And it's part of the thing that I love about the kids who play for me. I love the fact that this is so bad. When we take a runner up, they leave the medals and trophies there. People might say it's poor sport, man. It's this. I get it. I understand. They leave them there. I don't say a word to them about it. If their parents want to have a conversation, that's cool. But man, you know, it's I love the competitive spirit and the competitive drive that people bring, and I think they see that in myself. And when you're a reflection of your team, you know as a coach you've won.
That's good stuff, and I think it's well said. When you think about just what the mentality has to be and the amount of competitiveness that you have in order to have success at a high level. And that doesn't come by accident. And I think it starts with the leadership at the top. And clearly that's what you've been able to provide over the course of time as you've built up MAC basketball into what it is today. We're just past an hour and a half here, Kevin. And I want to ask you one final question to wrap up. Two-parter. When you think about what you get to do day in, day out, first of all, what's your biggest joy? And then secondly, when you look ahead over the next year or two, what's the biggest challenge that you have in front of you? And you can either take it to Trinity or you can take it to MAC basketball or combine them however you want, but just your biggest challenge and your biggest joy.
Well, I always think that the challenge in AAU and in high school is different because I think in AAU it's expectations and in high school it's the experience. And as long as you're aligning those two the correct way, then we can be in a good spot. You know, the biggest challenge and hurdle is, you know, truly making sure that in both those worlds, the parents stay aligned with the mission. There's nothing worse than the conversation going home, hearing from your mom or dad of how bad your coach is, about the mistakes they made. I always start every year at school when we do our parent meeting and saying, you can all sit in the stands and second guess me all day long, but there's 100 mistakes I'll make during a game that you don't know about. Why didn't you second guess those? And it's because you truly don't understand what we're trying to accomplish. You're not here in practice. So the only thing we can ask you to do is be a supporter. Be a supporter of your kid in the good and the bad, and be more importantly, be a supporter of their teammates and coaches in the good and the bad. Now, if we want to have a conversation, I take the Chuck Kyle from Ignatius thought about it. As a challenge, the greatest challenge in sports is parents. And as a parent, if you want to come in and talk about playing time, you are more than welcome. We will talk with you and your daughter about playing time at any time you want. The only condition I have is, who is she taking time from and who is that person that I'm going to invite them and their parent in the same meeting with us? In 8 years, it's never happened. And the reality of it is because people don't want to have those conversations because it's not real. It's emotional. And instead of supporting the team and the program, they're looking to make excuses of what and why of typically things they don't know. Because, Mike, you know it. Most people aren't as educated a basketball person like yourself. Most parents are the guy who never played. And it's the same way that parents can challenge, like my daughter. Right, she's 27 years old, and there's a guy in the stands who's 40, and he played JV basketball, and he was the sixth man of the year his senior year. Well, what he doesn't know is she was a college basketball player, played in the state Final Four, coached now in her fourth or fifth year of high school basketball, and she's forgotten more basketball than he'll ever know. But because he's a male and he played, he thinks he knows more.
Yep.
We all know what that is. So when the greatest challenge in sports are the parents. I am that parent, right? Sometimes I have to tell myself, don't be that guy. Don't be yep. the guy in the stands, right?
For sure.
Don't second guess your coach, right? I'm not a big fan of the football coach that my son had in high school. But what I didn't do is sit in the stands and rip the guy, right? I didn't sit down there and question him to anybody else. The conversations that we have at home with me and my wife may have been different, but when I'm at the field, I was respecting the rest of the players, the staff, the school, and wanting them all to do well. It's the old adage, if you don't have anything nice to say, don't say it at all.
Well said. I think that's is a challenge for anybody who's a parent and a coach. You really, even when you know the right thing to do, it still is a challenge sometimes to sit and not be critical and not have opinions, but what you have to do is just what you did, which is you sit and when you're there, you're supportive of your team, your son, your daughter, their teammates, the coach. And if you only have private conversations back at your house about it with your spouse, have at it.
But,
but for sure, you want to make sure that you're not becoming that parent who's creating problems for a coaching staff, because nobody wins when that's the case. Nobody wins. All right, Kevin, before we get out, I want to give you a chance, share how people can reach out to you, how they can connect with you. If you want to share website, social media, email, whatever. And then after you do that, I'll jump back in and wrap things up.
Yep. Yeah. Thanks, Mike. My phone number, and again, I'm accessible at that all the time. It's 440-387-6439. Email is macbballua@gmail.com. On Twitter, you can get a hold of us. Social media is really big in Mac basketball, and it's at Mac Basketball UA, MAC Basketball, capital U, capital A. Those are the three easiest ways to get a hold of me. And, you know, I want to tell you, thank you for letting me come on. Man, it's been a long session, but I tell you, I didn't feel like it. I just looked at the time and thought, holy crap, man, I could talk to you for a long time. You do a great job, and it was really easy to converse with you. So I appreciate that.
Absolutely. Cannot thank you enough, Kevin, for jumping on with us. I think what you just said there about looking at the time, I say this all very often that there's, I'll be sitting here and we'll be having a conversation and all of a sudden I'll look up at the time. I'm like, man, we're at like a minute. We're at like an hour and 20 and I still have like, I still feel like I got like 500 questions for you. So nonetheless, again, thank you for your time. Truly appreciate it. Like I've said numerous times, it's been an absolute pleasure to be a part of your organization with my son, Cal. And it's been a great experience so far. Looking forward to the month of July, a couple more tournaments. And again, thank you. So to everyone out there, we appreciate you listening and we will catch you on our next episode. Thanks.
Thanks for listening to the Hoopheads podcast presented by Head Start Basketball.